Hello and welcome back to General Chat. Today's guest is a fellow podcast host and all-around nerd. He's a host on podcasts Azeroth Roundtable and Core, a Heroes of the Storm-based podcast. He also plays a bard on There Will Be Dungeons, an actual play D&D show that airs live on Twitch. Please join me in welcoming John. Hey John, how are you?
Hello, Anna. Thank you very much for that nice intro. It's very good to be here.
Oh, you're welcome. I was so surprised when you, I mean, pleasantly surprised when you agreed to come on because I love actual play D&D podcasts. When I saw your character, Stanley, I was like, this is an adorable character. He's got some fun characteristics. He's got a mustache. Like, I was like, I have to get this person on to talk about this. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, thank you. I was very excited to be invited. I saw that it was an invitation and I thought, okay, well, I do three shows. Do I know which one this is based around? And as I looked into it, I thought, oh, it could be for all of them. This is great. I might get to talk about all the shows at once.
We're going to talk about all the shows and more. Before we do that, let's go way, way back to when you were first introduced to games. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I have a very hard time remembering when I first encountered video games because it really is something that apparently I grew up with. It's been kind of funny because my parents were apparently very into it prior to me being born. Then as I got older, my interest grew, their interest waned, and then it just continued to be a part of my life. So they tell me stories about me sitting there while they played Atari and playing Pitfall and things like that. I have no memory of any of this, but they will talk about it. And I do have memories of watching my mom play games like King's Quest on the computer and being too young to actually help out or do anything on my own, but being very interested. And I would tell her frequently, boot it up, I think I know the answer. And I try to give her help through the game, even though I didn't have any idea what I was doing.
Oh, that's so sweet. You were her little cheerleader.
Yeah, we gotta get through this together, Mom. We'll figure it out.
Absolutely. Games truly are team sports.
Yeah.
Do you have a distinct memory of, like, the first game that you really bonded with that was, like, your game that you wanted to play? Like, when you got home, you were like, I have to play this game.
I don't know if I have one that stands out particularly well in that regard, because it was just like all of a sudden out of nowhere the floodgates opened and I just was into games in general, and it kind of all hit me at once. I mean, I know I was a big NES kid, a big Sega Genesis kid, then into the Super Nintendo and all of that, and I just kind of embraced all forms of gaming. You know, I played consoles, I played on the PC, I played basically anywhere that I could, which I don't know how I did because I also played, you know, Little League and did all these activities and I was in theater, and I don't know how I managed all of it, but I just remember always being into gaming. But one of the ones that I remember very early on as a game that just sort of consumed me. Obviously, I'd been playing games for a long time already at this point, because this is not that old of a game. But I remember EverQuest really consuming my life when that came out.
Oh, yes. EverQuest is like, that's one of those ones where you talk to a lot of WoW players and they're like, yeah, you know, I was playing EverQuest and then I started playing WoW. It's like one of those kind of communal games that we all played.
Yeah.
Do you think that being in theater and playing team sports and being into gaming, all the things that you learned from that have kind of rolled into being on three podcasts? Do you feel like things that you learned from that came into your podcast portfolio?
I think so. I think everything sort of informs who we are as people. And, you know, I think those early experiences, being multifaceted and very diverse in my interests, I think led to a place where all of a sudden it gets easier to suddenly talk to people, because I'm used to you know, every season in Little League, we get together with a bunch of strangers, and now we have to be comrades, we got to be best friends, we got to be a team. And it becomes very easy to transition what you learned in that sort of field to, well, now I'm going to get online and I'm going to talk to a bunch of strangers and I'm going to just talk to them as if I've known them my whole life, even if it's maybe the first time that we've met.
Are you in an active guild in WoW?
I am. I'm in AIE, the one that's typically most known for being part of the instance and all of that. And we, as a matter of fact, this actually, I have no reason to bring this up except I'm really proud of it, I guess, is last night I ran a heroic Kill Jaden, which is, you know, a whole raid behind, but I was still very proud of myself because I'm bad at WoW.
Hey, an achievement to you is an achievement. That's all that matters.
That's right.
What brought you over to WoW? When did you transition from EverQuest into WoW?
So it's kind of funny. Back then, EverQuest 2 was coming out, and WoW was coming out, and I think they came out very close together. I want to say like almost within a week of each other. Could have been longer, but it felt very close, especially because I was working at GameStop at the time, and we got copies of these games in early before we could actually sell them. So I remember looking at EverQuest 2 and World of Warcraft back there in the back room. And for me, you know, I loved Blizzard. Diablo was my gateway drug into Blizzard gaming. But I was never really a big Warcraft fan. I had played Warcraft 3 and the expansion, and I thought it was neat. But I, at that point in my life, I was an EverQuest fan. So I was all about EverQuest 2. And the game came out, and I picked up EverQuest 2, and I did end up picking up World of Warcraft, and I thought, I'll give it a try. We'll see what they do. I like Blizzard. And I was completely convinced at that time that EverQuest 2 was far and away the better game. I did not like my first little bit of time in World of Warcraft. I thought it looked cartoony. I thought the animations were lame. I thought the world seemed bright and colorful, and that was nice, but you look at this other game and it look at the animations and look at what you're doing and look at all these crazy things, and it's tied to lore that I was very much into at the time. And I thought EverQuest 2 was going to be the winner. And I had a boss who was in the same boat. He picked up both games, and he came out of the experience the other way around. He came out thinking, wow, World of Warcraft really did it for me. EverQuest 2 isn't. And he and I would debate about it constantly, back and forth, you know, days and then weeks after it came out. And finally he said, I'll tell you why I like World of Warcraft. It's like every hour or two, somebody walks into the room and hands you a present. It was the weirdest description I had ever heard of a game in my life. And I decided, okay, if it's that good, if it's somebody giving me a present every hour or two, maybe I should try it a little more. And I started playing a bit more, and I was playing a Night Elf Druid, I think. And there was a point in the game where they said, okay, we're going to send you into a cave to fight some imps. And I remember looking for this cave, and I couldn't find it, and I couldn't find it. And suddenly I thought about the description, I was hugging the wall, and I saw it, and I saw the hole, and I thought, okay, cool, let's go in there. And there was no loading screen. And I just went into the cave, and all of a sudden the atmosphere changed, and now I'm in this dark cave full of imps that I'm fighting. And I go through this entire cave, and I come back out, and it's so funny because you talk to WoW players now, and that's the last thing on their mind. Oh, wow, there was no loading screen, really? That's amazing. But back then it was. And, you know, we've all seen the cave model that's based on, and it's no big deal. But at the time, that cave was really impressive. And that was the moment where I thought, man, this game is kind of crazy. I just, all of a sudden, I was in a cave, and then you go into your first zone transition where you leave a place and you go to another zone and it looks completely different, and there's no big loading screen. You know, the old EverQuest comment was always loading, please wait, that would occur when you transitioned from one area to another. And it blew my mind. And sure enough, and I think this is what he was referring to, about every hour or two, you leveled up and you got something for leveling up. It wasn't just congratulations, your stats are better. You got either a talent point or a brand new ability or one of your previous abilities you went and you upgraded. And it just felt like this constant reward. And next thing I know, I'm spending all my time in WoW, and I did not look back on EverQuest 2.
That's the thing about these games, isn't it? That constant feeling of like, I'm actually accomplishing something.
Yeah, it's good to have that positive feedback. You know, I think that's what we're looking for as gamers. We're looking for, you know, that good feeling. And sometimes it comes from rewards, but sometimes it just comes from, wow, that just felt really cool. That felt really neat. In that moment, going into that cave and coming back out, that felt rewarding because it was something I had never seen before.
Did it feel like an actual open world experience versus something that was much more granular?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I was very used to games where, you know, and I had played games like Dungeon Siege 2, which I think, or Dungeon Siege, I think it was the original one, where I think one of the back of box quotes was, "No loading screens ever." You know, it was something that existed in games, but it was considered kind of a novelty, and it was something that you took for granted. And I had spent so much time in these MMOs where when you wanted to go to a place that looked different, you got hit by a loading screen, and that's just the way it was. And all of a sudden, it stopped feeling like a bunch of boxes with loading screens around it, and it felt like a world that I was running around in.
How do you run around in that world these days? What is your play style? For instance, I am a very casual WoW player. I like to run old content for transmog or try fruitlessly to get mounts that I've, farmed over and over and over again to no reward. What are you doing when you're in game?
Well, I'm definitely a transmog fiend. It is definitely the part of the game that apparently speaks to my soul. So I definitely do the old content to try to get, you know, good transmog and to see it. You know, there's something to be said about going through that content by yourself at your own pace, that it just allows you to see it and get more out of it than maybe you did when it was a raid night. Everybody was tired and cranky at each other. Now you're there just by yourself getting to appreciate it. But, you know, I kind of shift from what you would say probably a bit hardcore to casual as the expansion goes on. You know, it's not uncommon for me to take just weeks or months off, but usually around the time when I'm very into it, I'll be raiding, I'll be very active. I'll run with our team, stuff like that, but it's not uncommon for me to pull back on the reins on it as well.
Is there a particular area or raid that you really like going back to for old content or just to visit? For instance, I really like Stonecore. I really like that entire area because it's fun. There's lots of glow particles and crystals and just a fun vortexy feeling to it. And even though I'm going in there for the mount that falls off of Slabhide, I still love going through there and seeing just like the funness of that instance, that giant like crystalline snake. And for me, that's all very exciting and I love going back to it over and over again. Do you have a place like that?
So, as far as zones go, I'm pretty much happy anywhere in Pandaria or even in Northrend. Both of those places are just, they're tied to some of my favorite memories, and wow, I think they're beautiful zones, and I like to just spend time there. And that's, you know, if my character was gonna settle down, hang up the adventuring hat, it would probably be in, you know, one of those two places. As far as instances go, I think for me, Ulduar is probably the one that just all of a sudden I get very nostalgic to this day. I know it's not one that gets frequently run for transmog stuff because it's got the weird vehicle bit at the beginning that's, you know, makes it a little more challenging to get in and run casually. But every time I go back there and I hear the music and the sounds and the voice acting that's in there, I just get super nostalgic for it. And that could be that Ulduar, in the grand scheme of things, is probably the most actively rated raid that I ever did. I was running it with teams. I could be wrong. Maybe this is something that wasn't allowed back then, but I want to say that I was doing 10 and 25 man versions. I just lived in Ulduar, it felt like. And so that raid in particular always just made it just takes me right back to it when I go in there.
What are some of the things that you really like about it? I really like that celestial room. I guess it's the final battle that you're doing with the beautiful floor, and then you're talking to the guardian and you have a scene. It's all really galactic and fun.
Yeah, the art there is just incredible. I think that's a big part of it. The stuff they have built around from that to when you go down to see Yogg-Saron and you go through the stained glass paintings, and there's just big chunks of stained glass floating in the sky. And then they've got the little biomes where, okay, this place is a forest, this place is just this big frozen Arctic area, and a giant tram ride into this big heart of the machine that's inside Azeroth. Like, you just see so much stuff there. It feels like you've just gone on a crazy adventure in a single raid. So I think the art is a big part of it, and I think the sound is really a big part of it too. The sound of the dwarves over the radio when you're in the vehicles has a very satisfying crackle to it. And even things like, you know, the crazy obnoxious voice of the big robot that you fight, you know, that stuff just stands out and gets in your head, and it becomes very hard to let go.
You know, I'm usually watching something or listening to podcasts or, you know, talking to guild members when I'm running through things like that. And I never have the volume on or very high. But because of the way that you've talked about that, you know, I can clearly hear the love for it in your voice. Next time I run that, I'm gonna have the volume up and I'm gonna be
You
listening.
should. You're going to get to the robot. You're going to hear his voice, and you're going to say, "Oh, yes, this is annoying." Because it's very bad. But it's bad in an endearing way.
The best kind of bed.
Yeah.
So we know you podcast about World of Warcraft and Heroes of the Storm, but Blizzard has a larger lineup than that. There's Hearthstone, StarCraft, Diablo, Overwatch, and with the partnership between Activision, now on the launcher, there's Destiny 2 and Call of Duty. What are your thoughts on the Blizzard franchise, and how many of the other games do you play?
Well, I am apparently in for a penny, in for a pound. I don't know what that means, but people say it and it feels appropriate right now because I play all of them. And not, you know, I don't put the same level of effort across the board, but I do play all of them. I think Diablo, like I said, was my kind of gateway to Blizzard. That's where I started. So I've always been a longtime huge fan of that series. That series has always been very important to me. I got into Warcraft with Warcraft 3 and the expansion, and then WoW, obviously. Hearthstone, for me, is kind of that game that is, I think I like it. I bounce off of it for a very long time, like multiple expansions go by. And then I get back into it, and it's all I do. And I think I also become an insufferable person during that time because I talk as if I'm like the king of Hearthstone when people talk to me. I'll be on my phone at work and they'll say, "What are you playing?" "Oh, I'm playing Hearthstone. It's a very good card game and you should play it," says the guy who just got off a 6-month break with the game. But I do like it. I like the idea of a card game. I think their dungeon runs that they did, I think 2 expansions ago now, that to me was the most brilliant mode I had ever seen get put in a game like that. I could have done that forever. I would have paid full price for a game that was just that constantly supported going forward because I thought that was incredible.
Yes, I agree. The dungeon run was such a fun mechanic because there were just all these little gimmicks and just these short stories that you just kind of got into, and then you had a battle at the end, and then it's satisfying, and then you're into the next thing and the next leg, and it just feels like it can go on forever and you can keep doing it. I hear you. That's
It
very
made for
fun.
really fun conversations with friends too, because it turned into this notion of, well, did you try getting this with the wax elemental? Because if you do this with the wax elemental, then you've got nothing but wax elementals and they can't die. And you just like all of a sudden somebody throws out this idea that you just think, oh, I that hadn't occurred to me. That's crazy. And then you try it. And some of it's RNG, but you play until you get it, and then you go, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. And it made for the conversation around that game with me and my friends just a lot of fun as everybody, came to town with their strategies, and here's how you play, and here's what you do.
Here's the thing with Hearthstone, from my personal point of view, is that I find it to be very enjoyable. I'm the kind of person that loves a good gimmick. Give me a gimmick, I love it. And there's plenty of that to be had in Hearthstone. Those things are very fun to me, and you can have fun with that in non-ranked play. But if you want to play ranked, you really have to put money in, and you really have to keep up with the meta that's just like constantly changing. And I think for people that do other things and have other games that they play, I think that it's just a little bit too quickly paced with the expansions.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I know when the newest one came out, that's kind of how I was feeling, is I watched it and it was a theme that sounded very cool. Like it's thematically it would be interesting to me, but I had just kind of gotten all in on this previous one, and then I saw what they were doing for basically the equivalent of dungeon runs, and I thought it felt like a downgrade to me. I haven't tried it. I don't want to say definitively that it was, but it felt like a downgrade from the outside. So I just kind of said, I think I'm going to skip this one. I think I'll sit this one out.
I do think it's very enjoyable. It's a good learner game for people that haven't played like Magic the Gathering, which can be a little intense for beginners. I think Hearthstone is perfect for people that want to learn a card game.
Yeah, I think so too.
Diablo. I feel like that's one of those games that you get into and you can binge, and like I'll sit down and play Diablo and I'll play it an entire night, and then the sun will come in through my windows and I'm like, ah, what time is it? Where am I? But then when I put it down, I don't find myself like coming back to it until months later. What do you think that they could do to make it more engaging? Do you feel like there's a way for Diablo to keep people coming back to it?
I think they're on the cusp of it. I think they discovered it with Diablo 3, but they discovered it so late in the game that maybe it's a little too hard to do anything about it. But they have, they've started these seasons to encourage you to start over, get back in, try again, get new rewards, do new things. The problem is a lot of the terms new in there are very relative because it works out to doing a lot of the exact same things from season to season. And so I feel like the first 4 or 5 seasons in Diablo 3 were very interesting because they had fresh new rewards. You're getting pieces of armor for, the transmog, and you're getting this and you're getting that. And then once they recycled, and all of a sudden we were back at square one, and you weren't really getting anything except maybe a pet and a banner or something like that, all of a sudden interest waned again. But I think that was them discovering the formula that should be Diablo going forward, which is find a way to play with the game, to make the old feel new again, and to get people to start over and run again. Because there was a period of time when seasons first came out where, I mean, honestly, it was dangerous that we were friends because Bo and I would play. And we would play until 4 a.m. on work nights And it was not good. And I was going to work and I had had no sleep. And I couldn't close my hand properly because I had spent too much time laying it on a mouse clicking nonstop. And it was bad. And we would do that for weeks because we were so into it. Like you said, Diablo is a sneaky game, and it always has been. It's one of the few games out there that I have just genuinely lost time of my life to, where you step out and you say, okay, well, maybe it's time for breakfast, and why is the sun going down, So I think they're gonna get there, but I do agree, when I'm out, I'm not really feeling the pull to get back in, but when I'm in, I love it.
I think one thing that they could do to maybe make things a little more appealing, because I think that's what it is, the idea of like, oh, there's something new, but it's just like, oh, you're maybe getting some armor or you're maybe getting a new banner, but you're not getting any new content-wise. I think if they could find a way to integrate some sort of new content, maybe like a new arena mode or something like that, I think that would be much more exciting for the seasons.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they need to lean into the random nature of Diablo. That's always been a big part of it, and just find new ways. I mean, I'll tell you, even the current season, they call it the Season of Greed. And the only thing they really did is now, whenever one treasure goblin would appear, two treasure goblins will appear. And it's a small thing, but it turns out I really like killing treasure goblins. And it was enough to make me get in. And every time I ran into them, I was, okay, sweet, there's two treasure goblins. And then they end up being the kind that turn into more treasure goblins. And next thing you know, it's a screen full of treasure goblins. And it's little things like that. I'm not saying they should in the future base an entire season around this, but it's that unexpected nature of the game that I feel like if they can lean into it and build a game around it, I think they'll have something really amazing.
I agree, and oh boy, is that treasure goblin chase so fun. That satisfying moment when you can interrupt a cast to their getaway portal, it's just oof, that's satisfying.
Yeah, not to mention when they leave the doorway open to greed. I am
Ooh.
notoriously a fan of the greed portals. I love it so much. Oh, it's the best place. We used to have a Slack channel with a bunch of people who played, and it was not uncommon for, when people were very heavily back into Diablo 3, all of a sudden somebody would go in there and they would just say, I got a puzzle ring, who's in? And it would fill up instantly with people just saying, oh, I want to go, I want to go, I need to be a part of this. And we'd open the doorway to greed, we'd set it to the highest difficulty we could, and all dive in there to see what we got because just everybody loved it.
And I think things like that are what makes it so enjoyable, because you start and then you just don't know what you're gonna encounter. You don't know what's gonna happen. And it builds as you're going through these levels and you're getting stronger and you're looking better and you're upgrading your things and your moves are fancier. You've got nice graphics and it's just so, it feels, and so quickly too, because this is something that you can definitely do in like a night, but it just builds to this level of like, wow, look at everything I've done. Look how far I've gotten. Look at my kingdom of riches.
Yeah, Diablo is a series, specifically Diablo 3, with the way their legendary items work. It is a series about breaking the rules. So you spend your entire time leveling in Diablo, learning what the rules of the game are, essentially, at a base level. Okay, the rule is I can shoot an arcane missile. All right, that's fine. As you level up, you start to learn exceptions to the rules, small exceptions to the rules. Well, now I can shoot an arcane missile that will chase something, but now it's going to be fire instead of arcane. All right, and then as that goes, that kind of builds sometimes to better, sometimes lateral moves, but you learn additional ways you can use that tool. But you have a very clear understanding of what arcane missiles are. Then you hit the end game. And the end game is about, okay, well, you've learned all the rules, now you're going to break them. And they give you gear that is designed specifically to do just that. So here's your gear that lets you shoot infinite arcane missiles in all directions and hits all enemies. Whoa! That's not how this spell's supposed to work, but it's incredible and it's amazing, and now it's my favorite thing in the world. And I think that to me is the most satisfying thing about Diablo 3 that I hope is a lesson that they take forward, is that that's kind of the buildup of that game, and it makes for a very satisfying conclusion.
Do you think that we will see any new content or announcements from them anytime soon? It's been a BlizzCon or two since we last heard anything. Well, has it only been one BlizzCon? I think 2016 they announced the Necromancer
Yeah,
expansion,
it's been
right?
one BlizzCon completely off, one BlizzCon with a minor. Well, I mean, it's so weird because you're the Necromancer, what a minor announcement, but it kind of is at the same time. So yeah, it's been a couple years, and we know they've been working on it. You know, it's one of those we know it, but they haven't announced it. You know, they've put out job postings for. We want somebody who's familiar with the Diablo series to come work on a project. What could it be? So I think that there is something coming, but we also know how, and it can be frustrating, Blizzard is about these things, which is until they're ready, they're not going to show it. So BlizzCon, I think for the next couple years, unless we hear something otherwise, my go-to prediction is Diablo 4. Just every year. It could be this year, and if it doesn't happen this year, I'm going to predict it next year because I feel like we are queued up for whatever that is.
I think that Blizzard taking the good gosh darn time is how we got Overwatch, right? I mean, if they had just given up on their quote unquote unnamed game and had given up on their first person shooter idea, then we wouldn't have had the beauty of Overwatch and now the Overwatch League and all the hype surrounding
That's
that.
true. I think it's definitely to their benefit. And I love that it's a company willing to, you know, not just say, okay, we need to turn this into something like they did with Overwatch, but it's a company that's also willing to say, we need to scrap this, like they did with StarCraft Ghost and with the Warcraft adventure game that they were working on back in the day.
Oh boy. All adventure games. Well, speaking of adventure games, this is the ultimate adventure game, the D&D adventure.
That's right.
You play D&D with a group of friends live on Twitch. How did that get started?
That has kind of been a long time coming in a lot of ways. We, you know, so Scott Bo and I frequently would talk after Core, and we used to do a feature on Core called Nexeperity, which started as this idea of Scott early on in the show, he liked to just give us kind of quizzes out of nowhere. And Bo did what Bo does, and he took that idea and exploded it into a much bigger, crazier, insane thing. Well, what it became very clear was that Bo didn't want to play Nexeperity. Bo wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons, or he wanted to play a game like it. And we would talk about it after the fact. We would say, "Look, it's so clear that you want this to be bigger, that you want to get into this field." We should do it. And it turned into, well, who do we invite to join with us? And would they be interested? And actually, kind of a lot like how Core got started, we talked about it for a really long time and didn't do anything about it. It just was kind of a constant conversation. It was that thing where you constantly say, well, one day, maybe. All right, we'll figure it out. We got to do that. We got to do that. And it's just a lot of that. And eventually, I think Bo drew a line in the sand and said, here's who I want to do it with if we're going to do the show. I want it to be, and he named basically exactly the cast we have. And he said, but I don't know if they're all going to be willing to do it, but that's who I'd like to do it with. So we went to Kristen and Kyle first, and we said, hey, I didn't even know about it. I keep saying we. I didn't even know that this show was coming up because Bo had assumed that I would be in, but he didn't want to get my hopes up until he knew that they had them. So they went to them first and got them on board, and Then I found out about it right after that, and it was just one of those things. Everybody wanted to do it. We talked about it and joked about it for so long that we finally just pulled the trigger on it.
Well, did you have any D&D experience before this? It sounds like Bo did. It sounds like he really wanted to play, but did you?
I played a little bit of a campaign during fourth edition. And that was my first and last experience with Dungeons and Dragons. I knew that it was something that I should like, but it was definitely tricky playing back then. I mean, fourth edition has its own inherent issues. But it, in addition to that, we also had a lot of people that were very new. We had some people in that campaign that were maybe, I don't know, not 100% invested in being there. And a lot of us didn't know what we were doing. You know, it's a lot like a lot of people's first time. You get told, okay, I'm going to be this character. And then the DM says, okay, well, you can talk to the guy. And then the first person goes up to talk and they go, hi. And everybody at the table laughs because it's awkward and weird. And everybody's giggling. And then, you know, the DM is frequently the only person that's in it when it's that awkward first game. And he's doing the hail and well met, I need champions to join me. And then you've got a bunch of dorky teens sitting around going, hi, do you need us to do anything? And that's the only response you're giving back to him. And so it was weird. It was awkward. It was fine. But it was enough to convince me it was a thing I would enjoy. But I can't say that it was the best thing ever at the time. And I kept hearing how great 5th edition was when it came out. And so it had always been on my list because I had heard such bad things about 4th edition that I thought I should give this a proper try now that they're saying, you know, this new edition of the game is good. And I will do it as soon as I get an opportunity to do it. And this was legitimately the first opportunity I had since making that decision.
I love that dorky teens interacting with overzealous DM story because I feel like that's such a universal thing of you're first starting and you're like, what do I do?
I think that is the thing that, you know, Critical Role is huge. It is the juggernaut of things. It's launching Dungeons and Dragons to a new place. It's doing amazing work. But I would say at the most basic level, what Critical Role has helped everybody with to some degree is get over that initial awkward hurdle by showing people, a group of people doing it. And giving them characters and ideas and things to emulate in their own way, it has gotten not just the DMs on board with getting into the world and getting into the characters, but now you have the players thinking about, oh, I watched this show and I really like how the characters behave and all of that, but they're doing voices and they're playing the character. And by getting them in that headspace, I think you've got people going into these games now in a post-Critical Role world a little more willing to role play and play the game like a character as opposed to a person playing a game.
I think that Critical Role definitely made being in character and being a nerd with your friends seem cool. I mean, we know that it was already cool and already fun and fulfilling in a lot of different ways, but when you've never encountered it and you're just thinking like, oh, this is just pen and paper and dice and like what can be exciting about that? And you're just talking to one person. But I think a lot of people watched Critical Role because you're right, it became so big. It so big they're starting their own studio doing their own thing. Like it's incredible. I think they watched that and thought, hey, this is accessible to me. And I think that's a really big deal.
Yeah, and it gives everybody a common language and a common understanding. And like you said, I think you nailed it with it made it cool Because now all of a sudden, if you're sitting at a table and you got the DM once again doing the welcome heroes, come sit around, join us. And now your friend next to you is sitting there thinking, well, I want to do a voice. I should do a voice for my character. They're not in a position where they're going to feel, I mean, everybody's going to feel a little awkward. It's always a little awkward, but they now have a template in mind saying, hey, this is cool. This is acceptable. We're all going to be nerds here. We're here to be nerds and have a good time and tell a cool story. And it just helps give that push that when they approach the table, instead of the little mumbly, I'm going to do this, you get something really special out of them.
And I think that's the thing. Like, passion is cool. And what is nerdery, geekery, fandom, but being passionate about something and sharing that with other people?
Yeah, I think that's completely true. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you hear people talk about this, and this is why I never understand the concept of gatekeeping. It's one of my biggest pet peeves in the entire world is so many of us, and I was extremely fortunate growing up. Maybe it was because I was into so many different things that I didn't encounter this, but I know so many people who spent so much time growing up feeling like they cared about things that they couldn't share with the world, that they couldn't be the person that they wanted to be growing up, that there were things that they loved and cared about and they just couldn't express it because, heaven forbid, they get judged. That's the part about where we're at. We're in a world where nerds run the thing. You know, we've got Marvel movies being the biggest movies of all time. I can go out and I can talk to your average Joe on the street about Thanos. What is this place and how did we get here is how it sometimes feels. Like, it's crazy. We can actually share our passions and we can actually express those. And I think everybody should embrace that and everybody should reach out and grab it and hold on to it. And that's why I have such a hard time with anybody who's about putting up barriers to that and, you know, throwing around ideas like, oh, you're not a true fan or you're not really into it. I hate that mentality so much because we've just hit such a cool place as a society if we can all just embrace it a bit.
So here's the thing about things, right? It's all about love. I love this thing, and I want you to watch this thing. I want you to play this thing. I want you to listen to this thing. I want you to go and experience this thing because I love this thing, and I want to share this thing that I love with you because you are a person that I love or a person that I potentially love or a person that I want to show that I am a loving, caring person to. I'm expressing my love and kindness and passion through sharing these things with you. And I think that is the beauty of fandom and of nerdery and of our community.
I think so. I think that's all anybody wants. And when you boil down the world that we're in, that's what it is. That's what social media is. We've designed platforms that now run the world. But when you think about what they run, why they got to where they're at, they got there because they wanted to present an opportunity for you to say, hey, check out this thing that I really like. I think you'll like it too. And let's talk about it. And let's engage over it. I mean, that's what podcasting is. That's what social media is. That's what Instagram is. That's what Facebook is. You know, all these things, whether you like them or not, whether you think they're good for our society or bad for our society, that doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, the message that it's trying to send is, we just want to engage with people over things we care about.
It's like, come on, guys, let's just be friends.
Yeah.
We don't have to have barriers between friendship. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if we're going to boil something down, I want to know whether or not you've boiled down some of your personal traits into your character on the There Will Be Dungeons campaign. Can you tell us a bit about Stanley?
Sure. Stanley is sometimes a little too much like me. It's one of those things, you create a character and you think, aha, this isn't me. And then you realize, you know, you've put aspects of yourself in there and maybe you've tweaked the knobs up a little bit and maybe they're more inclined to do one thing over the other. But you realize, oh, there is a lot of me in there, as it turns out. But Stanley Billings was kind of a fascinating character. I play a rogue in everything. And I didn't want to do it again here. For one thing, I kind of was waiting to see what my class was going to be based on what other people were picking. And we had two fighters and a caster. And I thought, okay, well, and one of them was unsure. So we weren't 100% sure that that's what the final roundup was going to be, but we were roughly sure that that's what it was going to be. So I thought, well, if I go rogue, which is, would be putting me probably too much in the character because I love playing rogues. But if I do that, I don't know how much of a benefit it's going to be to have yet another up in your face, stabby, stabby character mixed in with what we have so far. So I wanted to try something different, and I thought a bard seems interesting, but I don't want to play a musical instrument, and I don't want to sing, and I don't want to have to come up with any bard things. And so that was kind of the initial pitch to Bo was I said, Bo, I kind of want to play a bard, but I don't want to do any of the bard things. And he said, well, what's your idea? And I said, what if we made him a politician? And Bo sat there and said, okay, what are you thinking? I said, well, instead of singing songs, he gives speeches. And he says, well, you need to have a musical instrument. And I said, what if he carries a megaphone? And that was sort of the building point. And he started probably a lot more sinister than he's become, at least so far. He was definitely going to be more roguish, a little more willing to do whatever he felt was justifiable, the ends justify the means kind of character. But what I've probably learned the most playing this game is that you can go in with a mountain of ideas for your character. And it survives up until you meet the other characters. Stanley was supposed to be a politician. He was supposed to be somebody who wanted to lead, but was not going to lead. But when the team came together, you had the personalities that we did. It suddenly fit for Stanley to step into more of a frontline role than I initially envisioned for him. Because this was my first campaign, I wanted him to kind of be quiet in the back. And all of a sudden, we're with a bunch of personalities where that just didn't work and that just didn't fit properly for him. And so the character kind of evolved out of necessity. You're with a bunch of, as I called them last episode, chuckle buddies sometimes. You need somebody who's going to think about the ramifications of what's going to happen.
I love hearing that your inspiration was a politician and that you took it from bard to politician, because I feel like that's one of the things with tabletop games, especially, Dungeons and Dragons or Shadowrun. It's really like you can bring whatever you want to the game. It's all, it's all in the theater of the mind.
Yeah, he's been a interesting character to evolve, and that's definitely been one of my favorite things. Bo and I will send instant messages to each other all the time through Slack, just coming up with dumb ideas for alternative characters. And some of them I can't tell anybody because I would say that they are on the table as if anything bad ever happens to Stanley. Potential fill-ins, but we had an idea for a character that was part of a this would have been in this universe. He would have been part of a secret cloning program, and the character would essentially be a couple levels lower than whatever everybody else was, so they'd be technically very weak, but if they died, all of their experiences and memories would transfer to another one of the clones, and that clone would then show up later to join the team and carry on the first clone's mission. And they would essentially be Kenny from South Park. They'd probably die every single adventure. Just a new clone would come in and take the place. But they'd have different personalities each time. You know, some of them would be very salty about the fact that they had to come in and continue the adventure. Some of them would be more than happy. Some of them would be tragic. You know, oh yeah, I guess I had to show up. Had to leave my wife and kids behind, and they go on this adventure where they're destined to die. And we really liked that idea, but it'll probably never happen.
I just am only imagining right now the wacky ways that the DM could introduce this character and having to like keep coming back and popping up time after time. And you're just like, okay, you're trying to anticipate when this clone is gonna come in. What dramatic entrance are they gonna have next?
Yeah, so it turns out I really like characters that apparently let the DM have fun. Stanley isn't so much one of those, but ideas like that, a couple other ideas that I've had that I've shared with Beau, but I also play D&D in a home campaign that Ben from Azeroth Roundtable actually DMs. And I play a character named Tibbs Fulltum, who's a little halfling warlock. And he is another one of those designed apparently to make DMs have a really good time because he's a character who is tied to this otherworldly patron who sends him visions, and he just pursues that vision. That's all he cares about, is executing on whatever his patron has shown him. Well, the DM gets to play the patron. So the DM gets to basically decide what my character feels like doing, where my character wants to go, what the character wants to do, and I just play the character as with the personality that I've given him, but only trying to execute whatever plan has been shown to him. And he is a absolute blast to play. He is the extreme opposite of Stanley, which is good because frequently when we play, it's the same night as There Will Be Dungeons. So it's usually 8 hours of me playing D&D on that particular day. And I don't know if I could play one character for that entire time.
That is a fantastic mechanic. Your DM, well, Ben, he must have such a good time with that because he's probably at home during his planning sessions, like, yes, what can I make John do this time? What kind of gimmicks can I get into?
It really is, although he did have to ask me for help on one. He said, so how am I going to get your character to go with the rest of the party? I said, that's a very good question, Ben. He says, are you going to just go with them? I said, not unless you convince me to. He said, well, how do I do that? And I said, give him a vision of him traveling with the party. He'll assume that he has to travel with the party. Like, that's really all it takes. He does not have a mind of his own when it comes to what his goals in life need to be. He's very single-minded like that. And sure enough, that's the way we played it. And it was a lot of fun in our last game where my character, after our adventure, basically looked at the party, this group coming together, feeling like they formed a friendship and a bond. And my character says, well, good luck with everything, and turns around and starts to leave and go off on their own. Until they go to sleep that night and realize, whoops, actually, nope, I'm supposed to stick with them. Hold on. Hey, surprise, guys, I'm back.
Surprise! You're stuck with me.
Yeah, he was waiting outside their bedrooms when they woke up. So it was aptly creepy and fun.
Creepy like a rogue? You've talked about playing only rogues for a lot of your games, and we haven't talked about Core. We haven't talked about your Heroes of the Storm podcast. Do you play Valyra in that?
I do, not as much as I would like. I frequently, with the friends that I play, I get pushed into the tanking role more often than not, which is fine. I like playing the warriors there an awful lot. Yeah, Valyra was one of those characters that was, I think, you know, she was, I believe, before Heroes 2.0. So getting to level 10 was the big goal. And I think I was at level 10 within a couple days of her coming out. I just played those over and over because she plays like a rogue in World of Warcraft, you know, simplified, but she plays so much like it.
What is it about Heroes that made you want to start a Heroes of the Storm podcast?
Honestly, I don't think I was certain that I could. I definitely had a few reservations going into it. A lot of it, you know, came down to I wanted to do a project with Scott. and he seemed very sure about it. I was very into the idea, but there was definitely a lot of, well, how are we going to do this? But I wanted to do a project with Scott, and I think we were talking a little bit just before we started the show. We were talking about, what pushed you in and seeing other people who did these things. And the very first podcast I listened to was The Instance. And I didn't realize that the Scott Johnson who hosted The Instance was the Scott Johnson who did the web comic Extra Life, which I also liked. And all of a sudden, I found out that this guy who I loved the content he was putting out in podcast form, and I loved the comic he was doing on the internet, was the same guy. And that was a big inspiration to me because I do cartooning and I wanted to get into podcasting. And so it was, oh, here's a guy who's doing it. He's doing it. And so he was a big inspiration to me. And if you had gone back and told me, well, you're going to be doing a show with him, I would have said, you're out of your mind. No, that's a person to inspire. That's not a person that I'm going to talk to and spend, hours of my week hanging out with. That's not how this works. But sometimes that's how it goes. So that was what ultimately and initially convinced me to look into it. But much like There Will Be Dungeons, we talked about doing core for months and months before we actually pulled the trigger on it, because we had a lot of friends who did Heroes of the Storm shows, and we did not want to come in and just say, well, now we're here, and what makes our show good is that Scott brings an audience with him. So, ha. We wanted it to be different. We wanted it to have a different tone. We wanted to offer something that wasn't what the other shows were doing. And we had a bunch of ideas on how we were going to do that, and we did none of them. But I still think we found our own voice and our own place and our own uniqueness to bring to that space.
You talk about how you were really inspired by Scott and how he was one of the first podcasts that you listened to being on The Instance. Did that inspire you to start podcasting? When did you start doing that?
So I don't remember how far back it was now, because it's been a long time. I should have done proper research into my past here. But what I found was I listened to The Instance, and both Ben and I did, and we were big fans of the show. And it was just that nature of podcasting where you listen to people doing it and you think, I could be a part of that conversation. I could do what they're doing. I should do what they're doing. And you just don't pull the trigger. And every now and then I'd look, okay, how do you get a podcast started? What are the first steps? But you just don't pull the trigger, and you don't pull the trigger, and you don't pull the trigger. And I got very lucky because honestly, and this is my advice that I would give to anybody listening to this who is feeling the same way. You got to be the one to pull the trigger. I got so lucky, but most people don't get lucky. You have to take the risk and jump in. But in my case, I got very lucky. Ben got invited to be on a show called Arcanum of Azeroth, and they wanted to split the show up into three sections: a section about getting achievements, a section about getting mounts, and a section about getting pets. And the idea at the time was to have one host for each section. And so Ben joined in and he was doing it for a little while. And then they wanted a third host, so they brought me in to do that. And so that was kind of how I got into it, is I was invited into it. And I was very lucky with that regard. But we started doing Arcanum of Azeroth, and like most good creative projects, we pushed each other, especially when it came to Ben and I. We, being able to interact on a, at the time, daily basis, we kept constantly encouraging each other to do something bigger, to do something crazier, to do something better. And in doing that, we eventually shifted the show to where we wanted it to be about more than just achievements, mounts, and pets. We wanted to expand it into something else. So Arcanum of Azeroth ended up splitting into two shows, Arcanum of Azeroth and Arcanum Roundtable, as it was known. And we were doing both shows for a while, and then the original host left. He went to go do other things, and it was just Ben and I doing the show. And what we kind of realized is we're doing this show about achievements, pets, mounts, and we don't care. That's not the show that he and I wanted to do. That was the show that the host, who was now no longer there, wanted to do. And we said, well, why don't we just go do our own show? You know, why, if we've been put in charge of this show, we should just go make the show we want to make rather than just keep doing the show that we're not really putting our heart into because it's not what we want to do. And we talked to the host about it and we let him know, and he was, you know, good with it and, you know, wished us the best. And that's when we went and started Azeroth Roundtable, which was honestly one of the scariest things I've ever had to do because it was a new feed, and you're basically telling all your listeners, hey, go resubscribe to a podcast, please. And it seems like such a small thing, but we were not sure that anybody was going to follow us. And we got very lucky. Not only did a bunch of people follow us, but even Blizzard, who had apparently been listening to our Arcanum Roundtable, put out a tweet from the official Warcraft account telling people about the new show. And we were floored, and it just kind of took off from there.
Ooh, if that's not a boost, I don't know what is.
Yeah, we've been trying to become deserving of that boost ever since.
I think you guys have done a good job.
Oh, thanks.
You guys have been around for 300 episodes almost, and Core's been around for almost 140. That's a lot of time and effort. What has been your biggest takeaway after so many episodes?
I think the best thing that anybody getting into this can do is be consistent. Be consistent and be true to yourself. Everybody will tell you to be consistent. If you say you're going to put a show out, you put a show out. You know, we live in a world of Patreons and things like that, and that certainly encourages creators to be consistent if that's how they're getting paid. But even when you're not getting paid for things, even if it's just a passion project, it's so important to be consistent with your show. And I've worked on other podcasts. I had another show that I was doing called Parallel Words for a while, which was a writing podcast. And that was always the hardest part. You know, I was doing all the stuff I'm doing now, mixed with one additional show that I was trying to edit. And the show was about writing short stories. So, also in the week, I was trying to put together an entire short story in a week or two. And I was doing that with a co-host who worked as a full-time teacher with a part-time job and with three kids. And I don't know why we thought it would work, but we were really certain that it was going to work. And that show was the most inconsistent show that I've ever done. And eventually it kind of crumbled under the weight of not being able to be consistent. And it broke my heart because I loved that show. That show was great, but it was just so hard to find the time. And so, number one, be consistent. Number two, be true to your passions and your interests, because if you're not interested, people will know. And this is something that's, I mean, honestly, this is something that's going on right now with me on Azeroth Roundtable, is I have kind of begun to come to terms with the aspects of the game that I like and that I don't like, and what our show is and what our show should be. And I've kind of had to hold up a mirror to myself and say, I've spent a lot of time talking about things I'm not interested in, and it's reflecting in the quality of the show. And I need to work on that. And it's something that, you know, we're working on with that show, even with as long as it's been on. It's still something we're figuring out. We've changed the show format so many times, but you want to always keep it fresh and fun for both you, and if you have a co-host, you want to keep it fun for your co-host as well, and find that voice, you know, like we mentioned earlier, you know, where you're communicating things you care about and feel strongly about, and put that out there for people. And if you're putting out something that you just don't care about, people aren't going to care back. You know, it's the same thing. You said you're sharing what you love, in the hopes of telling other people, you know, hey, I love you and I want to share something I love with you. Well, if you put out something that you feel about, you're telling people, I feel about you, but please continue to support me and care about what I do. And it just doesn't work that way.
I think people can really tell. Oh, and you used my love analogy. Oh, I feel so seen. Well, being involved in three podcasts, like we've said, and oof, you tried a fourth. My goodness, that takes a lot of time and effort. How do you balance that? You know, that work, life, hobbies, podcasts, video games. How do you cram that all into the time that we're given?
Well, I'm not sure that I do. It might be a case of the like slowest sinking in quicksand that a person can possibly experience. And I'm just, you know, I'm not quite down to my neck yet, so we're gonna keep going and just wait until I'm buried under sand. But I mean, I think the most important thing is, you know, you have to, it goes back to passion. You can't make time for something you're not passionate about. And that's the biggest hurdle. If doing the three shows that I do felt like work, I wouldn't do any of them. And there are times where, you know, you put in a 40 plus hour work day and you go home and you haven't slept and you feel like garbage and you think, okay, I have to be on. And I have to be this excited, into it personality. How am I going to do that? How am I going to muscle through this? And in the case of, I would say, all the shows that I do, I mean, There Will Be Dungeons is on the weekend. I'm in a pretty good mood on the weekend. This mostly applies to Kor and Azeroth Roundtable. I get to talk with my friends, I get to talk with hosts that I genuinely enjoy speaking with. And as a result, I get in, I start doing it, and once I start doing it, I remember why I do it. I might be literally up to the moment that the call comes through, just thinking, I can't do this tonight. I can't. It's too much. The moment I'm talking to them, it turns on, and all of a sudden I remember, oh, this is why I do this, because this is the most fun thing in the world, and I love it.
I think that's it. I think that's the gist of it, right? Because I have that thing with streaming or with doing this where you just get so like in your own head about starting. And then you know you're up to the moment where you're before you're supposed to start an interview or before you're supposed to go live and you're just like, "Ugh, can I just reschedule?" Or "Ugh, can I just, you know, not stream tonight?" And there's that John Mulaney quote, like, you know, there's nothing as satisfying as canceling plans, right? And it's like, that's almost what it feels like up until you start. And then you go, oh, this interview is going great, which it is, by the way. Oh, this stream is going well. And it's like, yeah, no, I really like doing this. And I think that with things that you really truly enjoy and that you're meant to be doing, you will get that feeling and it will be satisfying.
And if you don't, I mean, that's, don't let it get you down, but just find something that does, you know, find something that does make you feel that way. I keep telling myself I want to get back into streaming more, but what I have found, and we'll see, this isn't me saying I'll never do it again, but what I have found is that for me, video games are an escape of sorts. They are a chance to unwind from the busy demands of, you know, day-to-day life. They're a way to relax, and whether it's play a role, challenge yourself, just zone out and have a good time, whatever it may be, it's a chance to unwind and a good chance to watch shows on Netflix. And that's not conducive to streaming. Streaming, you have to turn it back on. You have to start the machine back up and keep it going. And I found it really, really easy to say, should I stream what I'm about to do? And say no. And to me, that seemed crazy because streaming seems like the thing that I should love, that I should enjoy doing. But I don't think it is. But I think that's okay. I don't think that that needs to be a thing that's for everybody. And so I think anybody who's trying to figure out what their passions are, sometimes we tell ourselves, no, this is what it is, because you think it, but you need to feel it to really know.
And you have your other things too, right? Like, not everything has to be your thing. And there's no shame in that. There's no shame in trying something and giving it your all and realizing that, hey, maybe this isn't the thing for me. Because you just try again with something else and you'll find that thing that's for you.
Yeah. Just gotta follow your heart.
Well, on that note, it's time for our closing question. Now, I like to do a what if style question to prompt my guests to really think about what they're passionate about. And I want to ask you, because I heard of you from Azeroth Roundtable, like I know you through the WoW community. If you could create a race in WoW, what would it be?
So I've been giving this a lot of thought since you prompted me. I've been thinking about it a lot. And it's embarrassing to say that I don't have a great answer despite all the thinking that I gave it. Because here's my problem. WoW might have it already, which is then confusing because it's not what I play. The reason I say that is because my answer would be Worgen. You get to play a person who changes into a big, scary wolf, and that sounds awesome. That sounds like a cool race. It sounds like probably the coolest race. Probably would have a hard time thinking of something cooler than that. And yet I don't play a Worgen at all. And I can't really figure out why, except for a couple theories. I think Lady Worgen look weird. I think Guy Worgen sniff too much. I think it's weird when you turn into a vicious, cool-looking werewolf and then you pull out a sword and shield. That seems like it defeats the purpose of what you were designed to do. It would be like if Edward Scissorhands took out an electric razor to cut someone's hair. Like, it just doesn't seem right to me. It seems off. But in theory, that race is everything that I would want, because I think I love this idea of transformation in whether it's the races or the classes. Maybe it's just the Dragon Ball Z fan in me. The idea that you're something and you turn into something else just seems super cool. So my ideal race would probably be something like that. But I kind of feel like turning into a cool wolf is already pretty great. So I don't know how I one-up that.
Well, and I think Worgens are I think they're a good example of an idea that's really good, but I don't see a lot of Worgens out there. I don't know that it was that successful. And I think for me, a lot of that has to do with the Worgen intro campaign not being that engaging. I don't like the Worgen starting zone. Like, there are a couple things about the Worgen, just like storyline and lore, that I just don't find appealing. It's like, hell yeah, I want to transform into a werewolf. Are you kidding me? What? Or like the idea of like the forbidden Worgen form and whatnot, like that's very fun. But then when you get into the nitty gritty of playing a Worgen, it's like, oh, this is not that exciting, or it doesn't pull you into the story of the character that much. It's just like you're playing a human, essentially.
Yeah, it's kind of where you're at. And I don't ever play humans. Like, that's bottom of my interest level. I am a human. I don't want to play one. So it gets a little tricky in that regard. But I also, you know, it's the same deal with demon hunters. Like, they turn into this, they have these demon forms, and I really like that. So the whole transformation thing is pretty cool to me. I've always said I want to play an ethereal. So that's another one that's on the table as a very cool race. I don't know if we'll ever get it, but that's one that's always been around as a thought. So I don't know. I still am not sure I have a great answer on creating a race. We did just a week or so ago, we talked about, you know, half elves and stuff like that. Like, half elves exist in WoW. Caligos can turn into a half elf. That's what his person form is. But we never see him. Caligos turns into a thing that's literally the only time we ever see that thing. So I think there's a part of me that wants to see like the half races getting added. You know, what's a half orc? What's a half elf? You know, let's explore that lore a bit and dive into that.
Yeah, I wonder if those like half races would be like pushed out of their, homelands or their specific areas, their starting zones. You know, that's why we don't see them in any of the areas, right? Like we don't see them because they're kind of pushed out, they're less than. That would be a really interesting dynamic to explore, the idea that like you're playing as this character that's been cast out, and then you have to maybe fight for your right for a seat at the table. That could be a fun thing to
Yeah,
explore.
I'd love to see that. And again, it's one of those things where it kind of sounds like, oh, we're coming to this like cool new idea, but it isn't. It's been in WoW or Warcraft lore forever. I mean, you got Garona, aptly named Half Orcan. That was a little on the nose. Who's a half orc, half Draenei, and then you've got, like I said, Caligos, who's half human, half elf. And so it's in their lore, it's in their world, but it has never been explored, and it feels like this just well of untapped stories and potential.
Well, if anyone over at Blizzard is listening, we talked about it first. You better hire us for some content creation.
That's right.
Thank you, John, so much for coming on. This has been a really fun interview. I've had a blast. Can you let us know where we can find you?
Sure, thanks again for having me. If you want to hear more about what I do, you can follow me on Twitter. I'll let you know where I'll be. That's John, JON underscore Jagger, JAGGER. You can catch me on any of my shows, the three we've talked about, Core, Azeroth Roundtable, and There Will Be Dungeons. And yeah, that's where I will be.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, bye, guys.